Welcome to Respect Life Radio. My name is Deacon Jeff Bennett with Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Denver. And remember, you can listen to all of our shows at respectliferadio.com. Our guest today is Michael Toscano. He is the Executive Director of the Institute for Family Studies. Michael is a leader in efforts nationwide to adopt laws to make technology safer for kids. His writings have appeared in the Wall Street Journal, Newsweek, New York Post, and First Things, just to name a few. And we're going to talk about a recent article in First Things called Recovering Our Memory. And Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Deacon. I appreciate it.
Well, really enjoyed the article. But before we get into that, maybe you can let people know a little bit about the Institute for Family Studies, what you guys do, how you work to strengthen marriages and families, and how people can kind of access that and find out more about it.
I'd love to. The Institute for Family Studies is a think tank based in Charlottesville, Virginia, but with many scholars contributing to our work around the country. We were founded by a professor of sociology at the University of Virginia, which is just down the road. His name is Brad Wilcox. And Brad wanted to establish a research institution that would remind the reading public and America at large the pivotal place that marriage has to practically every aspect of our lives, individually and collectively. So you'll find, for instance, a lot written in major media outlets like the New York Times about how kids are falling behind in school, or that there are all these forms of inequality that are undermining our social life. But what they often ignore is that the greatest inequality is between those that come from children that come from intact married households and those that don't. And that a lot of the outcomes that they want to see for disadvantaged groups are effectively impossible if we are going to ignore the marriage component. So we study all the ways in which marriage and family are advancing and benefiting our goals as Americans, but also at the same time, we want to present a realistic picture of the state of marriage and family. And so we also do research into all the ways in which these vital institutions are under duress today, and how they need, even though these institutions themselves are creative and they make life better for everyone, we also need to make life better for these institutions. And so we put out research through research reports based on original surveys and analyses of some of the richest and largest data sets in the country and in the world. And then we will also, you'll find us in major media institutions like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Atlantic, and you'll find us on Fox News and National Review, making the case for marriage and family, and also reminding America why these institutions are so important. So where you can find us? On our website, ifstudies.org.
Well, and it's unfortunately that intact families, marriage, and raising kids is almost countercultural now, because as you mentioned, the assaults are nonstop. And we've actually had Brad on the show. It's been a couple of years, I think. But it really is, it is something that, is attacking us from the outside. But, you know, when I read your article, it kind of reminds me that, the attacks are happening from within too, when we allow ourselves to become distracted. You know, you talk about yourself as being a voracious reader when you were young, and how reading really tweaks the mind and gets us thinking. But we live in a world of technology that almost numbs our mind and keeps us from thinking.
Yes. And so one of the reasons why we as an institution are interested in the problems associated with our uses of our devices and social media is that it's something we have observed and learned is from our own personal experiences. I mean, my article is about my personal experiences, but what got us interested in it as an institution, before I talk about my specific story, is that, we know that couples, even those that are married and that are growing their families and having kids, they are profoundly troubled by the way in which their devices take them out of their relationships. An obvious example, which we've all seen or even done or experienced, is you're sitting there with your spouse or, maybe it's your girlfriend and you're having a conversation and she's saying something which is important to her and you look down at your phone while she's doing it. And that's not, part of that is that our wills are imperfect and crippled, but there's also something about these devices themselves that are made to induce that kind of reaction. And so one thing that we've learned when we've looked at the effect of these devices on younger people is they are full of anxiety. This is something that Jonathan Haidt, who writes about this, and he's a social psychologist at NYU. He has a new book coming out called The Anxious Generation. And the really interesting thing about Gen Z is that when they're asked questions about their mental health, obviously we all know that the story is that it's very negative. There's a bad story, general story. But the thing that they are most often say that they're afflicted with is by anxiety. The interesting thing about anxiety is that it's very close to fear, but instead fear is a response to an objective event. Somebody's threatening you. But anxiety is this kind of pervasive atmosphere of worry. And one reason why, and it's interesting that this is the primary problem that they face is anxiety, this pervasive worry. And they get it because I think it's because when they are with their friends are never solidly with them. Their friends are always flitting off to something online. And so no one's ever with you. And there's always another group that's present even when they're not there. And what if, and when that person when your friend turns his or her eyes to the device, he or she is showing a preference for that group. So you're never fully in. Everyone's always getting kicked out of their relationships. And this is creating a general crisis. It's affecting our families. It's affecting our mental health. And so IFS has been studying this issue, but my article was specifically reflecting on my own experiences of addiction to these devices and what it means for my ability to remember and to be present with people.
Yeah, and it is a very good article. I would encourage people to go to First Things and look it up. It's called Recovering Our Memory, as I mentioned earlier. But, you do talk about your life and you talk about how, technology became an issue, right? I think you even talk about, you got into drug use and all those things to the point now where you've pretty much lost your childhood memory. And, that's a loss, right, that can never be compensated for, can it?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's, I was, what drove me to write this piece is I was, it was over Christmas and I was with my wife and our children and we have three little ones, 5 years old, 3 years old, and 1 year old. And it was a wonderful Christmas. We had a great, beautiful Advent and a wonderful Christmas. And I spent some time with them and I was reading Treasure Island of all things, by Robert Louis Stevenson. And I was really just loving it, but I was constantly having this nagging desire to get online. And it reminded me of when I was young when I was before I was I'm a convert to the faith, but when I was a young man, I started smoking a lot of marijuana, and it was daily, multiple times a day. And I remember, although this doesn't appear in the piece, but the beginning of an awakening for me at the time is I was walking around my school, which was in Long Island, New York, and I was walking the halls, and I had a thought. And it struck me that when I had the thought, that this was the first thought I had had in a long time. And I remember turning to my friend and saying, when you walk around the halls, do you think about things? And they said, yeah, of course. And I was completely blown away by this, because I walked around zombified, dumb. And, you know, I kept going down that path, but there was like a deep worry inside of me that I was destroying myself. And at some point I just ended up having a religious conversion, and I prayed one night, you know, and I did some harder things as well, but I ended up having a religious conversion. I prayed one night that God would help me, and then I never smoked marijuana again after years of doing so multiple times a day. And I was obviously just feeling as light as a feather. And was, you know, eventually I'll just, you know, skip a few chapters and say I ended up in Rome. I ended up in Catholicism. I did eventually also go to Rome on several occasions, but I crossed the Tiber, as they say. But as I was beginning to recover some of my mental faculties long after my conversion, that was when smartphones and social media started to become general technologies that people use. And I had been very saddened by, as you said, by the fact that I had lost all of my childhood memories through all of that smoking, and it never came back. And I hope that in heaven they will be restored to me, whatever's there. Better, you know, good or bad, I want to see them all, you know. But I could see at that time, as I was recovering, and as the light was returning to my eyes, and as my heart was being opened up to so many things, I could see that my friends who were early adopters of these things, that they were changing, and they were becoming something like the addict that I was just a few years ago. And I was very cautious and very worried about them right from the beginning. And so for the longest time, I've been somebody who has put up guardrails around these things in my life. So that way, I could just keep the mind that had been restored to me, even in this, you know, much poorer form. I am devastated by the fact that I can't remember practically anything from my childhood, because I know I had a sweet one. But I fear that when I look around and I see all of these people that are constantly, as I said before, being taken out of their moment and being drawn to other places, that we're all basically in a state of amnesia now, where no one is paying attention to what they're doing and who they're with. And because of the nature of the technologies themselves, which are constantly presenting people with a torrent of new things all the time, that nobody's remembering remembering their own lives. So that was the thing that drove me to write that piece, was just, I was in a moment with my family and I was reflecting on all that I had missed, and how I fear that others have just unwittingly walked into the same trap that I was in before.
Yeah. And it kind of reminds me, you know, we've seen, you know, many parents, and I don't think necessarily for nefarious purposes, but they think technology is the babysitter for their kids. And you mentioned, you know, America is a nation of amnesiacs, and it reading your article reminds me that, you know, we are supposed to be, as parents, as moms and dads, you know, making really good memories for our kids, and not through technology, through participation, through reading for them, through, you know, using our minds and really engaging. And that seems to be, you know, sadly, you know, a thing that, you know, when you talk to people about it, they look at you like you got three heads.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a shame, you know, and my, unfortunately, because of having, my wife is, you know, is one, and she's just so wonderful, and she's been graced with just so many of the right values and sensibilities, when it comes to how she wants to raise our children. And I, on the other hand, had to get burned, you know, in order to learn, to learn some of these fundamental lessons. But it's meant that, you know, we've taken a more difficult path when it comes to our kids, because the reason why parents put their kids in front of electronics and media is because your child, who is rambunctious and difficult, sits still for a minute. And our lives are so busy now that to find even the shortest break, the incentive is, you know, what harm could it be? Let me just put some, you know, PBS kids show on the device and give it to my child. It's for kids. It's not a big deal. So I totally understand why parents do it. You know, when our kids get on an airplane or they're at a restaurant, they're usually chattier and a little bit more rambunctious than other kids who are kind of sedate and docile. But, you know, but the truth is that we know that the long term for our children is we're trying to introduce them to reality and give them a taste of it and teach them to love it. So that way, when it is a time of choosing, what do I want? Do I want the synthetic or do I want the real? I want to give them a chance to want the real. And that's a harder road. But you know, our kids, almost by necessity, they just enjoy stories. They love when we read to them, and you know, they can. And my daughter, who's 5 years old, is learning her letters, and she's starting to read. But they have so many little books memorized, and that's, you know, that's part of what we want to do, is not just get them to love the real, but to fill their insides with stuff, with things to remember. And it's working. But, you know, gosh, it is definitely, you know, I understand why parents don't do that, but they should. They should do it anyway. It's harder, but it's better.
Well, anything worthwhile is a challenge. And, it, you know, kind of reminds me, probably dating myself, but I don't know if you remember the song back in the 70s by Harry Chapin called Cats in the Cradle, about a dad.
Yeah.
Who never had time for his son. Mm-hmm. I wonder if our kids are going to look back on their experience as a child, never having really physical interaction with parents, you know, just more cursory, and most of their interaction was with technology, and how they will lament the fact that they were never really bonded with mom and dad because the barrier was always there and encouraged.
Yeah, it's a real possibility. I mean, when you go out and you see a family of, you know, with two parents, two kids, and every single one of them is on a device the whole time, it's such a missed opportunity, because you're sitting across from the two most wondrous creatures that God has ever given, you know, aside from your wife. You know, they're miracles that have been given right to you, and you're not looking at them. But at the same time, like, you understand why it is that way. Kids are hard. Conversations are hard. Being present is hard. So you naturally reach for the thing that makes it easy. And the thing that makes it easy is to just get out of it. But, you know, in the end, it's just, it creates basically people who are lonely together. And that's where the anxiety comes in. It's that sense of being alone, even when being there. And there's no doubt that at some point, you know, God willing, these kids are able to raise their eyes up from these devices when they get older and get control of this, although it will be extremely hard given the way that it has affected their brain, that they will even have an opportunity to reflect on this. That would be better than where I think we are going to be headed, which is people may be so immersed in the devices that they may never even have a moment to think about how things went awry with their parents. So in a way, I would welcome that. That would be better than what may come, which would be it never dawn on people at all, which is another potential road for us.
Well, and I think that's where, you know, faith is so important. I'm a convert myself and spent many years thinking if I just provide money, then I'm doing my job. When in reality, it's being present, right? It's spending time in prayer together as a family and discussing scripture or whatever it is, right? The faith gives us a great opportunity for really deep family time and really to be able to use the minds that God gave us. And, you know, to ignore the faith or just to think it's just an hour on Sundays is to our detriment in just so many different ways.
Oh yeah. And you know, my wife who is so good. And I know as the head of the household, I should be really good at it too, but it's more natural for my wife. But she's really good at helping us as a family observe the time, the liturgical seasons. And that movement throughout time, it helps you to mark where you are in your relationship to God and to each other. And, you know, it fills your days with importance, you know, like when you're going through Lent, it's not just another day, you know, it's a time of anticipation and fasting where you're preparing your hearts for one of the most worst days in history is the death of our Lord, but then also the most glorious day in history, the day of his resurrection. And the liturgical calendar is just filled with ways for us to remember and also to mark our days with meaning. And I think, you know, our kids, I'm just so grateful that they are, they're learning to move through life in that kind of rhythm. And so the stuff that you do at home, you know, such as praying with your kids or reading them books, is the ultimate source of memory, the thing that that forces us to be present and put all beyond present to move into kind of heavenly things is of course the church and the mass, you know, and the liturgical calendar, all of those things that force us to recall, to remember what God has done for us. It's the home, the domestic church, and the church are working together to keep us in the moment, but also to help point us beyond the moment. It's potentially a beautiful life that we could all be beautiful but difficult life that we could all be living at any moment. But what we instead decide to do is to drown ourselves in kind of false electronic contentment.
Well, and I think, you know, we need to remind people, like, technology in and of itself isn't evil, although there are evil things on technology, right? Yeah. It's our prioritizing it ahead of faith, family, health, all those things. That's where we get in trouble. So it really does become a matter of prioritization. And I think that's kind of, as I read your article, that's the reminder to us. Are we going to prioritize our kids? Are we going to prioritize quality time with our kids? Because if we do, then we'll be able to put that technology in a drawer and not let it be a distraction to us.
That's right. And I think, you know, what we should have learned to this point is that it will actually require something of an extraordinary effort to make that, to prioritize correctly. And it's not your fault. I mean, these things are designed to get your attention. You know, they spend extraordinary sums of people that have, PhDs in behaviorism, psychologists that are designing them so that way you stay on those things and you don't attend to something else. So I think, a lot of people, for instance, are buying phones that, are, made by certain companies like Bark and Gab, which have, you know, restrictions on what you can and cannot do. Or, you know, a colleague of mine, he has a timer on his phone that so that way he can only be on his phone for an hour a day, including during work hours, so that when that's done, he can't get on. And in the case of my wife and I, we use dumb phones. I mean, during the day, you know, at work, I'm on a computer. So it's not like I have chosen, you know, the path of kind of pure a-technologism. But what I have decided to do is, hey, you know, it's really important for me when I go home to be present with my wife and my kids. And I'm not strong enough for that. So given the fact that I'm on a computer all day for my job, well, you know, why don't I just get a phone that can enable me to do that? But, you know, I've been blessed with employers. Well, since I'm the executive director of the Institute for Family Studies, I can make that decision. But in my previous posts, I've been blessed with employers that have been okay with that. And a lot of employers want their employees to be on all the time. And I think what we need to start doing, especially, you know, if let's say we're, you know, Catholic business owners, we should remember that there are hours of the day where we would encourage our people, why don't you invest in a technology? Why don't you get the kind of phone where when you go home, you can be with your wife or with your husband and your kids? I think would do us all very good, all very well.
Well, I know this always goes fast. We're down to about the last 20, 30 seconds, but remind people again how they can find out what's going on for the Institute for Family Studies.
Yeah, thank you, Deacon. You can visit us on our website, ifstudies.org, and we'd be most welcome to see you there. I promise you it'll be well worth your time.
Respect Life Radio is produced by Catholic Charities in the Archdiocese of Denver. And remember, you can listen to all of our shows at respectliferadio.com.